Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Willie and D-Mace coming at you here on a Tuesday. Beautiful day in Nashville. Can everybody just take a quick deep breath? Whew. Yesterday, we started 100 miles an hour and kept going the entire 3 hours. It was crazy. And it was D-Mace's first day back. It was Nick's first day back from a long vacation. We didn't even get a chance to catch up because of all the craziness
Absolutely. That
happened with the Predators on the first day of free agency. And it was the talk of the league. I don't care what channel you go to. Go to the Canadian channels, go to the NHL network, go to the hockey shows that are podcasting. Nashville was the number one story in the league yesterday. Now, what is that worth October 5th or October 10th? Nothing. Nothing. As we've said before, winning the press conference in July is not what wins you the championship.
No, but, not at all.
But the Predators definitely made a big splash and, on paper, improved their team. And Barry Trotz at his press conference yesterday was the first to say that the pieces have to fit. Games aren't won in the summer. But everybody feels pretty good about what the team looks like. Now, did they get a little bit older? Yeah. And we're going to get into all of that during the show today. But we wanted to just sort of reset for a second. And we'll bring Max Herz on, who was at the press conference yesterday with Barry Trotz. We'll get his insights with the Predators radio. But D-Mace, I wanted to get your thoughts on your vacation. You went on this long European. We had a lot of fun at your expense. We're like, where is D-Mace? What country is D-Mace in? We were looking at Instagram. We're like, okay, today's in Italy. Okay, today's in France. But just give us a quick recap of what you saw. Like that's a pretty fun time.
Yeah, it was a fun trip, all because of my daughter Bailey Mason. She really put the whole trip together. You're talking about a 24-25-year-old young lady, and this is how responsible she is. Now, her mom had something, you know, she helped out too, but it was to a point that I kind of felt bad. She stressed herself out because she wanted to make the trip a perfect trip for everybody. And, you know, it was the best trip that we had been on together in a long time. All of us. So we stopped at Florence first. I love Florence. I'm a Florence guy. It's laid back, historic. The pasta and the pizza is just, that's all I ate, Willie and Nick. It's pasta and pizza. I mean, I couldn't get enough of it. But
now, was there a difference over there? Because you noticed, like, really good pasta.
Oh,
like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we went to this wine vineyard. And the wine was exceptional. Even my son had a couple of sips of wine. My daughter had some. She's not really a big, you know, wine person or alcohol person anyway. DJ isn't either. But he, you know, went in Florence or France or wherever you're at, you do as they do. So we had some wine at the really nice vineyard. Then, you know, end up buying, you know, cases of wine, which will be here hopefully within the next month. So I will, you know, bring you guys a bottle of that so you can have.
Does it have a wax covering on it, or is it like a
it was from a vineyard.
Okay.
The vineyard we were at was one of the oldest vineyards. And, you know, they grow olives on that vineyard. You know, obviously different kinds of wines. And the lady that was sort of took us sort of through the first part of the wine vineyard, she talked about where in Tuscan, where we were, you know, these are some of the sort of older parts. And she told us how they sort of, you know, how they would have to keep the wine, the cheese in certain places underneath ground to keep it, you know, cool and all this stuff. It was
in
just
the dark.
In the dark. It was just a really good sort of history lesson. So we were in Florence for 3-4 days, then traveled to Paris. Now, Paris is, if anybody's been there, Paris is like New York times two.
Really?
Yes. And we saw some of the stuff.
I have an image of New York, I've spent a lot of time in New York. Mm-hmm. I've never been to Paris, but I wouldn't think that they're New York. I think skyscrapers everywhere and hustle and bustle everywhere.
Minus the skyscrapers, minus the skyscrapers, but the hustle and bustle,
they've got.
They got it, and they got it in droves. I mean, and maybe you know, because that was my first time, myself and Derek's first time DJ being there. But Marcy and Bailey, they had been there prior. Because they love shopping, so Paris is a place you go shop and see a lot of good, great things. Obviously, the Eiffel Tower. I had never seen the Eiffel Tower up close, and it was wonderful. Right at sunset, the every hour on the hour after the sunset, the Eiffel Tower, it lights up with these lights, and you could just see it from miles away, and a lot of people were there. So we made trip to the Eiffel Tower a few times just to sort of relax at the end of the evening, which the evening, it got dark around 11 o'clock. I think I told you guys that yesterday. It got dark around 10:30, 11. So it throws us off. And then they were doing this protest, which we didn't get to see. But they were doing this protest in a part of Paris where I guess they were their election was getting ready to go on. And the people were protesting by, using a bathroom in the canals.
What?
Yes, these people were using, because what they were saying is all of it sort of, if I understood it right, all of it sort of washes past the politicians, places that they work. So all this, smell and everything sort of goes along their way. And then they're going to have in this canal, they're going to do some of the Olympic races or something like that. So what would you call a president in that country?
Is it Prime Minister?
Prime Minister, Prime Minister. So I guess the Prime Minister, wanted to show that, the water's clean. So they were, I think it's a she. Getting in the water, was going to get in the water.
Wetsuit or just like regular bathing?
I don't know, because we didn't get a chance to see it, but we heard about it. So our thing was...
So you didn't jump in there?
No, hell no. So we wanted to go to the canal and see, but I think we were in the wrong part of Paris. I think they were in another part of Paris. So they had their protests going on in regards to that and their election. And then they were setting up things for the Olympics. You saw stages being built, roads were cut off. But we had a wonderful time visiting different areas and then getting to shop and all that other stuff and having some great dinners as a family. And then from there, we spent four or five days in Paris. Then we went to, we ended in Amsterdam. Now, Amsterdam, you gotta love Amsterdam. Because Amsterdam believes in 420, and they believe in it heavy. And this is the crazy part about Amsterdam. It's not.
That's another place I've never been, but you hear a lot of things.
You need to go. Yeah. It's a great, it's like, because Amsterdam is, it's just like, listen, you be who you are. Just do, like, it's not like, we're judging. It's just be your person. You got to live in your body. Be your person. We accept it. We're receptive to just do you. Don't bother. Just do you. And that's how I was. But they believed in 420, which I believe in 420, which made that a marriage, between me and Amsterdam. Yeah, I had to be me. I had to be me. So, but we enjoyed Amsterdam. We had a really good time. Took a boat ride through the canals for 2 hours and got a history lesson on that. The people were great. The food was great. We went to this one French fry place that was one of the world-renowned fry places. The line was so long. I mean, you got to get there early. Those fries, those fries were good. I've never tasted no fries that. No, those fries were good.
Wow. So they beat McDonald's on a good day.
Oh, hell. They're stomp McDonald's.
Ooh,
man, McDonald's on their worst day and McDonald's best day, they still would beat McDonald's in a fry tasting contest.
That's fair.
So, and then right next door to it, it was this cookie place. And if you know me, I love cookies. Boy, oh boy. I think the first time we went, we end up getting like 10 cookies for all of us. It was four of us. So we getting up 10 cookies. And my son's a cookie monster too, so he loves cookies. And then right before the boat ride, later on that day, I went back and got 5 more cookies. So we were all cookied out, but we enjoyed Amsterdam. I would love to go back. I would recommend anyone that loves to travel. If you haven't been to Amsterdam, please go to Amsterdam. It's a cool place to visit. Again, I want to go back just to stay a little bit longer. But yeah, we enjoyed it. We have fun. I thank my lovely daughter who put most of it together. I wish she would have paid for it too, but she didn't. Her mom and I had to pay for it, but she did such a wonderful job at putting the trip together for us, and we had a ball. I love traveling with my kids, and I love traveling with my ex-wife, because we just have fun when we're together. We enjoy one another, and they jones me all the time, I swear. As my son would call, he trolls me 24/7. And it just seems like once he starts trolling me, everybody else just gets on me, and I just got to walk away. So, but yeah, well, we had a great time. 2 weeks was great, but I couldn't wait to get back, just to be in my own bed, to see my dogs. And the kids wanted to see their dogs too, and I'm sure they wanted to be in their own beds and their mom as well. So, but we enjoyed the trip. We try to do at least one of these big trips a year. So this was the big one. So everybody, it was a much needed trip. So we did it. We loved it. Can't wait for my wine to get here. And if I could ship the 420, I would have, but I don't want to be in nobody's jail. Okay. So
I didn't want it there.
Exactly. I don't want to be in nobody's prison. So let's just leave it there.
You said when you've got to be in your own body when you're in Amsterdam. Another guy that loves being in his own body is Max Hurst, and he is on the line with us right now. He was at the press conference yesterday for Barry Trotz, and he's on the road right now himself. He's heading back to his homeland. He is a Yinzer, as he likes to say, heading for Pittsburgh and then on up to the Northeast for a little vacay. But we wanted to get his perspective on the press conference yesterday with Barry Trotz. Max, what's going on?
I honestly didn't want you guys to bring me on because I was enjoying that so much from D-Mate. That was great.
You were on a little mental European tour just as you were driving along in northern Kentucky or wherever the heck you are, right?
I missed the beginning. D-Mace, were you talking about how the river has fecal matter in it?
Yes, in Paris. Yeah. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that is nuts.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. So we were trying to look for it, Max. We couldn't find it, but we knew they were doing it. So
it's probably better that you couldn't find it.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's kind of my thought. Yeah.
There's E. coli. Oh, but yeah, I'm sitting here. I pulled over because the Preds schedule just came out, and I'm trying to digest it all at once. Have you gotten a glance at it, Willie?
I'm glancing at it right now for the first time, it is out. They announced, of course, the home opener, and it's it's interesting. The first game of the year is against. Wait, am I looking at this right? No, I'm looking at last year's. I'm trying to get it all together. I want to look at it as a big, almost like you would see on your wallet or on a wall. Yeah. But I'm looking at it game by game. I guess it's not out there yet.
I tweeted both versions of it, Willie. So go take a look at that.
Okay.
The things that are standing out to me, 13 Saturdays in Smashville, which is awesome, including the Red Wings the second week of the season, which will be a lot of fun. Thanksgiving Eve and Black Friday afternoon at home against the Flyers on Wednesday night and the Lightning on Friday afternoon.
Oh, boy.
Stamkos' return to Tampa will be early on Monday, October 28th.
Get it out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, yeah, that will be emotional.
The Preds will also be there for a preseason game. So, I mean, who knows if he goes to that. Then
I'm going to guess they're going to hold off on that. I'm just going to make the call right now. He's not going.
CMAs are a little bit later this year. So the CMA road trip is in mid-November, but it's the usual Colorado, all three Western Canada, and Seattle. And then here's the crazy road trip. Over New Year's, a five-game road trip that's, this is insane. It starts and ends in Winnipeg. Winnipeg on December 30th, then Minnesota at 7 on New Year's Eve, then 2 days off, Vancouver, Calgary. So that's two back-to-backs in 6 days around New Year's. And then 2 days off after Calgary to go back to Winnipeg.
What?
So is it basically a Canadian trip? That's what it is.
I've been saying this since they came into the league, but Seattle has messed up the schedule in the West. And now you got Utah in there, and now we're seeing the after effects of that.
Well, here's my last point is about Utah. So the way the division scheduling works, there's one team in your division that only comes to you once instead of twice, and there's one team in your division you only go to once. And the Preds are only going to Utah once. Mm. They are in the Preds division. Preds are only going there once, and it is the fourth-to-last game of the season. So the Preds' first visit to Utah will not come until April 10th.
Now, are they playing in the basketball arena for the first couple of years?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay.
And it's not perfectly configured, Max. Mm-hmm. I've read a little bit about this. I think they have to do some things with that or maybe even build a whole other building eventually.
Yeah, they're going to have to do some major modifications long term, but it's going to be like when the Islanders played at the Brooklyn Nets Arena, but worse. The capacity is going to be, I think, between 10 and 12,000 because of obstructed view.
Now, Max, looking at their schedule, I'm trying to pull it up. I can't. Only thing they're showing is the first home game, I think it's October 10th versus the Dallas Stars. Just you glancing over, which part of the schedule are you looking forward to? Is it that Canadian road trip because of the complexity of it, or is it another part of the schedule that you will be paying attention to?
The most home-heavy months, which get me excited for the fans, October, the first month, is very home-heavy, which is great with all the moves the Preds have made to get everybody to see Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, and Brady Shea for the first time. The opener is at home on Thursday, October 10th, like you said, against the Stars. Then one road game after that, then a four-game homestand. So for the whole month, seven of the first – oh, wait, I'm going to go into November, actually – 9 of the first 12 games are at home, including 3 Saturdays, including Red Wings and Avs on Saturdays. And then February, which is disrupted for 2 weeks by the Four Nations Tournament, which is a mini World Cup that is Canada, U.S., Finland, and Sweden. And we already know Forsberg and Saros will be in that tournament. So February has a 2-week break in it. But around that break, it's 6 home games and 2 road games.
Wow.
Including a 4-game homestand with a weekend back-to-back, Avs and Devils, both at 5 o'clock on a Saturday and a Sunday, February 22nd and 23rd.
I'm looking, and I just glanced over this one time, but just in the Jonathan Marchessault being an original, what do they call them, the Misfits, right, an original Vegas Golden Knight. The first trip to Vegas is not until April. Right.
Yeah, and that's the only time. Wow. So that'll be
the first and only regular season trip is in Vegas very late in the season in April.
Yeah. The Preds' last road trip of the season is to two Western Conference cities that they only go to once, in Utah and Las Vegas, and those are the last two road games of the regular season. Good call.
Max, can you stick around? I know you're on the road. Can you afford to be pulled over? Or maybe you'd just like to continue on down the road and still chat with us on the other side of the break? Because I want to get into the press conference yesterday.
Yeah, we can talk about what I actually came on to talk about.
This was sort of breaking news, though, so we wanted to get that to you. The schedule is out, and you can start making your plans for the big... We don't have the national TV schedule or anything like that just yet, so... Sit tight on that one, but the schedule is out. It's always fun to glance that. Not quite as simple as looking at the NFL schedule and saying win, loss, like we always do. It'd take a while to go through 82 games and predict that at this point, but you can kind of look at how it shapes up. There's always the long road trip in the CMAs. There's always the break at the All-Star area in February that you're kind of wondering what's going on there. And as Max mentioned, the Four Nations Tournament is going to be the featured thing during the middle of the regular schedule. That's something you'll have to kind of wrap your arms around. And then there's that long road trip that always coincides with March Madness when there's the SEC tournament going on in Nashville. So when we take when we come back, Max will talk about yesterday, a huge press conference. And I'm not going to use the term win the press conference, but I am. This was where a lot of people nationally were focused on this city because of the splash the Predators made with the enormous free agent signings of Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, Brady Shea, and then on a lesser level, Scott Wedgwood, a backup goalie, and also re-signing Alex Carrier to stay in Nashville. Elliot Friedman is going to join us at noon, and then we'll get into some football stuff. We've got Teron Davenport and Tim Hasselbeck at during the 1 o'clock hour, which is going to be a great hour for us here today. So we've got full speed ahead. Mm-hmm. Stick around. You're watching and listening to Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game.
You alluded to it earlier. Do you guys envision Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist staying together and Stamkos and Marchessault with Evangelista or someone else?
I am not the coach. I'll let the coach. I learned this one. If I do the lines and they don't work, I'll get blamed for it, you know, or you force things. I told you guys about the laser beams. I got to play this guy. I'm going to let that play out with Bruno. Bruno will talk to the players. He'll get a feel for it.
It's Max Purrs asking the question yesterday to Barry Trotz. By the way, just a side note, who was asking the questions and who was covering the press conference yesterday? Max Hurst, Robbie Stanley, Nick Kieser from our staff. So if you were wondering before where you want to get the insights of people that follow the team, and this is going to be a very interesting year. I don't know what's going to happen, but there will be spotlight on this team that maybe we haven't had in this city for a few years as they have loaded up and gone for it. This station for over a decade has been the one that has given you the in-depth coverage, the detailed coverage with hosts that pay attention and follow the team from start to finish. And that is worth noting. And I know all of you listening, we have seen the progress. We have seen the benefits of that, especially in the last year or two. And it has been very, very exciting, the listenership of this station as a whole. That's about all I can say. But I just wanted to make that point because listen to that whole press conference. It's over 30 minutes. It's our people that are asking the questions. So Max was on hand. So Max, what did you think of that answer there? Because it was interesting. Andrew Burnett went on with Jared about an hour after that, and Jared kind of asked the coach the same kind of questions. But Barry Trotz gave the answer that probably a GM should give.
First of all, Willie, I like the fire, and I agree with you. Let the people know.
Yeah. Know. Oh, we're the flagship. We ought to be, right?
That was great, yeah. Man, between D-Mace's Europe stories and your bringing the heat, this is a heck of a show today so far.
Well, what did you expect, Max?
I forgot the question. Sorry.
Well, okay, so you asked about the line combinations, and I do think that is the usage of these new guys. I do think it's going to take a little time to sort it all out. And I heard Andrew Burnett tell Jared that there's going to have to be a little unselfishness with new players, and winning players usually can do that. But I am curious about all of that as they try to piece it together at the starting training camp.
Yeah, well, Barry Trotz, he said, it was kind of an offhand sentence, but in his initial statement, he said, kind of as a hypothetical, our top line was so great last year, you think about Stamkos and Marchessault together with Evangelista. And he said that, so I figured we got to ask to make sure that wasn't something that he really was thinking through already, because as he said, he gave the answer I would expect him to give, and the correct answer, which is he's not in charge of the lines, and also what we think the lines are now probably sets the tone for a sheet of paper in September, and from there, like you said, it can change a ton. But a year ago, right now, Barry Trotz was saying he envisioned Gus Nyquist playing on the second line on Cody Glass's left wing. Obviously, that did not happen. But I just thought it was good to get that clarified, and just it kind of frames my mind in terms of what to expect in training camp. But if I were them, it would be hard for me to resist Stamkos with Marchessault and Forsberg, right?
Oh man! Well, if you wanted to really load up on that, it did sound to me like they want to at least to start keep the Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, the known quantity together. I think the first thing you've got to figure out is, can Stamkos and Marchessault be a good fit? And then if they are, do you play Stamkos at center or wing? And who is the other guy on that line? I definitely think you heard Andrew Burnett sort of brainstorming. Mm-hmm. Tommy Novak is a very good creator and passer who is a good enough shooter to draw coverage away. But Marchessault and Stamkos are both volume shooters. So is that a fit? Max, I think that's going to be a philosophical question and probably a question that they have to sort of see if it works. And it's going to take some time.
Yeah, and they've got options, which is great. They've got some really capable options. And I would say don't forget about Yusuf Arsenin and Cody Glass here as centers.
Hmm. Yeah, it's going to be – they're going to have to figure this out. But this is a good problem to have, Max. I said this yesterday. It's better to have a problem like this than to try to not have it. I would rather have these guys and try to figure out where to put them and place them rather than not to have them and then trying to figure it out from there. Another thing I do want to ask you about, and Coach Andrew spoke on it yesterday a little bit with Jarrett, Askarov and his sort of attitude coming into this training camp. Now, you know, once you sign UC to a long-term deal, and I think if I was Askarov, you probably had to see that coming, but then you go and sign a backup goalie right after you sign UC to a long-term deal. That is what I think he didn't expect. But how do you think they approach this with him? Because to me, he still has to go in. Yes, he can be angry. He can be upset or disappointed. But, you know, he has to be able to, you know, take that anger and frustration and use it in the right way, because they're going to give him an opportunity to compete in camp. And if he comes in with the attitude of, you know what, I'm pissed off, I'm mad and angry, he's not going to be able to be the player that he wants to be.
Yeah, it's been interesting hearing the thoughts from the decision makers, because Barry Trotz was asked about it, and like you said, Bruno was asked about it by Jared yesterday. I don't have a firm answer for you that isn't anything you already said, and I thought you laid it out really well there, and obviously you have great perspective. Like, you probably backed people up when you were a freshman or sophomore in high school or a freshman at Michigan State that you might have thought you were better than, and it just... it takes time, and things like that happen. But, yeah, it'll be really interesting. And I think a lot of it is them wanting to test him and put him through adversity, too. I mean, clearly the number one decision-making factor is they think that he's not ready to be a full-time NHL goalie yet, and the Preds have all the information to make that decision. And they brought in Mitch Korn to a new supervisory goaltending coach role, the original goalie coach of the team. I'm sure he was part of this as well, even though he's newer to rejoining the organization. So it was definitely a big group decision. And this was a funny quote that Kevin Lankinen actually said on one of our shows last year, but it resonates with me. Like, the goalies are lucky. Their coach to player ratio is 2-1. And these guys are getting coached up constantly. Like, it's just going to be interesting to see, like, how they approach him, whether or not they want to give him some NHL time, even if there's not an injury. But Wedgwood is just as good of a backup as Lankinen. They gave him a 2-year deal. So it's, I don't know. Willie and I disagreed on this on the air during the draft on Friday, but Barry Trotz gave some good thoughts that I think are closer to Willie's side yesterday that I do agree with, which is we don't have to do anything now. But it'll be interesting to see, because Askarov is an asset, and at some point they're going to have to make a decision and find a way to get something for somebody.
Now, it's interesting that people, you know, they don't listen to me and Barry Trotz. They want to listen to other people say, you got to trade him now. You got to trade him. The strike point of the hour side.
They will listen to you, Willie, okay? They will listen to you, damn it. Now, on the UC front, because I haven't spoken with you, Max, since UC, and I know the deal was probably in works last week, and then officially it became official yesterday. But are you surprised with the number, the AAV per year? Do you think it was going to be higher? Do you think he took a hometown discount?
I think he probably took a little discount, but we've seen that in a lot of the contracts the Preds have given out recently, and I think the state income tax thing is really starting to mean something in that NHL, and it is helping the Preds, which is really, really good. Yeah, and they talked about this for probably a solid 5-10 minutes on one of the Canadian trade deadline shows yesterday, and it was about whether or not they're going to build the no state tax teams, whether they're going to build that into the salary cap in the future, because apparently some of the Canadian teams are demanding that to happen, and it doesn't seem likely, because, like, what happens if you take a discount? And then the example they gave was Mikhail Sergachev, who last week got traded from Tampa, a no-tax team, to Utah. So, like, they can't do that, I don't think. But I think it shows in the numbers the Preds have gotten these guys to agree for, and I think Carrier is another example of it. I think Tommy Novak's contract he signed late in the season is a good example of it. These guys want to stay. They want to play here. The no income tax plays a part in it, but they're very happy, and now the way this team is looking right now, who wouldn't want to stay? So I think Saros deserves it, and the big thing to remember, too, I don't know if this gets talked about enough, but he would not have been able to get that eighth year, which in reality, because he has one more year left on his original contract, is a ninth year. He would not have been able to get that last year anywhere else. You could only sign contracts longer than 7 years with your original team per the CBA. So there were a lot of reasons for him to stay. Both sides wanted it. I don't think it was a perfect journey to it by any means, but they got there.
Max Hurst is with us, Predators Radio, 102.5 The Game. He was at the press conference yesterday. Barry Trotz was asked about no trade protection for UC Saros, and Barry Trotz did say, as he said with Jared last week, that he deserved some. But yesterday, now that the deal is done, I think we were all hoping for a few more specifics, but he didn't really give them completely, but he sort of said, and I tried to go back and listen to it. It's still hard to tell if he means the protection is on the first part of the agreement or the second half. I guess we'll wait and see if and when those details come out. But he did verify that there is some no trade protection for UC Saros.
Yeah, and there really had to be, which I think you guys have all said, and Trotz basically echoed that. But I don't know, Willie, tell me if I'm wrong, but is it not decently safe to assume that he has a full no trade for the first maybe 3-4 years and then a list for the second half?
You know, if that's how – that's maybe how I would try to put it together. That's how a lot of players put it together. They want the full no trade for a while, but then you reach a point in your career. And, you know, we were doing this this table last week. When UC Saros is, I think, 32, Yaroslav Askarov gets into that age category where, you know, he's going to be in his mid-20s, I think 25. I think when Saros is 22, and this is 2027, Askarov will be 25. So if Askarov, if they play the long game and Askarov graduates up into that backup role and they're sharing the job with Saros as the leader, Askarov is the understudy. That's probably the crossroads. That's probably the last crossroads. That, to me, is when it's important to know what the no-trade ramifications are. I'm sure they were thinking about that when they were putting this together. But Saros probably wants as much as he can get, and then maybe it's modified. There's a lot of different levels it could be.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to remember, with the three contracts they signed yesterday, and including Yossi and Forsberg, they now have five skaters under contract into their late 30s. So Saros's contract, by comparison, and also as a goalie, I mean, I don't think you have problems keeping him the whole time if that's what ends up happening.
Right, and this would be, again, in the Barry Trotz, the term he likes to use is protect the franchise, protect the organization, right? Do what's best for the player, but at the same time, I want to protect the organization. So if Askarov, in my vision, and this has been my vision, a lot of people don't think it could happen, but Askarov as not high paid, you know, backup goalie for 2 or 3 years, if you have the notion that he is on the verge of superstardom, which a lot of people think he's got that ceiling. Soros, to me, if you can have some leeway at a certain point and he is able to be traded, and remember, you can trade somebody who has a no-trade clause. You just have to get them to waive the no-trade clause, and the player has a lot more say, which could affect what you could get for him. But in my mind, $7.74 million is a cap hit for a goalie that's, say, age 32. We just saw the Predators very interested in players 33, 34. Jacob Markstrom at 34 just got traded. Soros could be a commodity even at 7.74. So I think they could trade Soros way down the road if they thought Askarov was the man. But we're a long way from determining that. But I'm just saying you've got options open.
Yeah, you got a lot of options, which is great. And we are now at two drafts in a row where the Preds have said we're looking for a top five pick in exchange for Yaroslav Askarov. How many drafts do you go until someone gives you one? You know, so that could happen.
Okay, Max, what about the age of the roster? I think that's what a lot of people are concerned about, that it is a 30-something. But when I was, you remember this, D-Mace? Mm-hmm. I think it was ABC. When we were growing up, there was a show. I never watched it. But it was called 30-something.
30-something, yes.
30-something.
Came on Saturdays,
yeah.
I believe.
Something
yes.
like that. I don't know. But they are kind of the 30-something roster. I think Adam Vingan did the math that they are 31st or 30th in average age, at least as they sit here now. There is a chance that they could move some pieces around between now and the start of the season. But what kind of vibe did you get on Barry Trotz? Because he knows that that's going to be a question.
Yeah, he was asked it, I believe, by John Glennon toward the end of the press conference, and Trotz said, basically, I'm not worried about it because these guys, one, have the intangible drive to win, and two, have, actually, Bruno said this on Jared's interview, was the hockey sense and the hockey IQ is what keeps these guys able to play a system like the one that Brunette has here in Nashville now that's physically demanding. So I think those two answers kind of combine for what the Preds' vision here. At the end of these contracts, you don't know where you're going to be at, but that's not for 4 years down the road. And as of now, the Preds have a team that can compete. It will be an older team, but that's the way it's been designed. And, I mean, the Panthers in a lot of ways were that way too. They added a lot via trade, a lot via free agency, not a ton of homegrown, and that's how Barry Trotz saw the quickest path to being a top four conference final contender type team. And I think this was the only way the Preds were going to get there for the next few years. After the guys who they really wanted to make big leaps last year didn't happen, and almost all of them ended up with smaller roles or in the minors than they'd envisioned, with Tomasino, Parson, and Glass not seizing the moment like they'd hoped. So this is the direction they've chosen to go in, and it's a completely different direction. But I don't think it jeopardizes the future, because that wave of the first-round picks that were in Milwaukee last year, none of those guys are going anywhere. So it just kind of slows down the timeline for them. And at some point, if someone like Joachim Kimmel is top six or top nine worthy, there will be a spot for him, and it will be alongside whichever of these guys are playing their best.
Yeah, a lot of layers to this that will be addressed in the next two or three years. But I think for the next two seasons, you kind of know you're going to ride and hope that these 30-somethings still have enough in the tank to make deep runs with supporting roles from the group that you just identified, Max, that they still have. And they have flexibility with these guys. They can come up for parts of seasons and then go back down for Milwaukee, most of them anyway. They do have to make a decision on Parson and Glass and Tomasino in particular, because those guys are waiver eligible. And so you can't just shuttle them back and forth to the Admirals like you could in past years. So they will have to cross those bridges. And then, of course, what to do with the Askarov will be a looming question for a while as well. Enjoy your drive, Max. Be safe, and we'll talk to you when you get back to the Ville.
Yeah, thank you, guys. My pleasure. See you soon.
All right, Max Hirst on the road, but he was at the press conferences yesterday. So a lot of questions going forward. D-Mace and I will tackle a couple of them, and then we'll set the stage for Elliot Friedman, who's going to join us at noon today. You're going to want to hear that because he's been drinking from the fire hose, but maybe now it's calmed down enough to where he's got his senses about it. I saw him on every show possible yesterday, and of course, breaking news, he's always tweeting things out and reporting on things that are happening. It's slowed down some. There's still some other pieces that will be moved in the next couple of days, but largely the first wave of free agency is in the book. Are the Predators a contender? We'll definitely ask that question. You're listening to Willie and D-Mace, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We're coming back to wrap up hour number one next.
Andrew Burnett's with us, Predators head coach. Your system is very high octane, very taxing, and I do wonder, is there a thought about how you're going to kind of work in and fit in a 34-year-old Steven Stamkos or a 33-year-old Jonathan Marchessault, given the fact that as much as we'd love for these guys to still be 27 years old physically, they're probably not.
Yeah, I mean, what separates them, and I always separated them and separated Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist, is their hockey sense. And I think the way that we like to play, for sure, there's a lot of skating, there's a lot of work, but there's also a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of thinking. There's a lot of being a step ahead. And they're both, one, they still can skate, and two, they're extremely intelligent players that anticipate extremely well. So it might take a little time. Obviously, we do things a little bit different. You could see from our body of work last year, took a lot of our guys, 15, 20 games, 30 games to get accustomed to. Very similar to, when I was in Florida and we had Sam Reinhart come in from Buffalo, it took him, 20 to games to get going, but he figured it out real fast, and he had tremendous seasons for me. So I think it, we're really looking forward to it. It might take some time. It's always trial and error, but they've been leaders. They've won Stanley Cups. They've been a part of amazing runs, and I think they're just excited to come and fit in and play hockey here in Nashville.
That's Andrew Burnett yesterday with Jared Stillman on Stillman & Company. That was in the aftermath of the Barry Trotz press conference that we're breaking down today on the show, now that we've had time to just breathe a little bit after yesterday's frenzy. Willie and D-Mace here with you, brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up. And in Tennessee to bet. Elliot Friedman joins us at noon. You're definitely going to want to hear that. I thought it was interesting, D-Mace, because Andrew Burnett, I thought, articulated the key with guys. And you're a guy that played for a long time in the NFL at a high level. Mm-hmm. Keeping your body in shape is one thing, but also just sort of knowing how to play. The words that jumped out to me with Andrew Burnett when he's thinking about Stamkos and Marchessault and a lineup with a lot of 30-somethings is maybe you don't have that blazing speed, but if you have hockey sense, anticipation, things like that, you can play fast and play effectively even if you're not a burner. So that, to me, that was the key buzzword out of that, was anticipation and hockey sense.
Yeah, you have to.
Because that's part of football too, right?
Yeah, as you start to get older, you start to, lose some of that, what got you there. You start to lose some of that speed, some of that quickness that you were able to use to your advantage early in your career. Then you have to start learning as you're, and I think this sometimes what the mistake young players make is that, I'm faster, quicker than everybody, so I don't have to work on those little nuances of my game, because they think, I'm going to be fast, forever. That's what they think. And then 3, 4, 5 years down the line, they start to lose that speed, whether it be because of injury or they're just getting a little older. Typically, it'll take, after you reach that 30, then you start to see the decline a little bit in that speed. And some guys just don't know how to handle it. Why? Because they haven't worked on their all-around game. And what's most important is the mental part of the game, because the game of football, pretty much like hockey, is, I think, a lot mental. You have to think the game long-term. You have to think the game 2 or 3 plays ahead. You got to understand situations in games. And the better you can understand it, the quicker you are. And it may seem as if you are playing faster than everybody else. No, I'm not playing faster physically. I'm just playing faster mentally. So how can you get guys to accept that as they start to get older. And that's what Coach Bruno is going to have to figure out with these some of these young, you know, older guys. And, you know, but you're bringing in older guys that have achieved a lot.
Yeah.
Guys that have played, that have been at the pinnacle of this sport. So you don't have to teach them or tell them you need to do this mentally. They know it already. They know it. Why? Because they've been through it, and their career sort of states that if you look at their career as a totality. So I think it'll be easier for him to figure that out, because they will figure it out, meaning the players. The hard part is going to be, how do we get these guys to mesh together?
Right.
That's
in a new system.
Exactly.
That is a little different.
Absolutely.
It's like changing offensive coordinators, right? Mm-hmm. There is a little different way that Andrew Burnett's pretty unique, mm-hmm. how they play. But as you heard Bruno say, anticipation, hockey sense are important. And he thinks wise players who have won mm-hmm. can adapt. But he did admit it will take some time. The other facet to this that's important to remember, and we can't play the entire interview again. Yeah. I would encourage you, if you're a Predator fan, listen to the whole interview that Andrew Burnett did with Jared. It is really, really good from start to finish. But the learning component that young players, and Luke Evangelista would be the student that was able to advance in the class quickest, mm-hmm. from learning from Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist and guys who have that trait that Andrew Burnett was talking about, but now you bring in more guys. Mm-hmm. That other group of young players that Barry Trotz said will probably get a taste of it. They're going to get in there some this year. That it's a great opportunity. Andrew Burnett said, you learn the game faster, you learn to play smart when you learn from great players like that. So that's the opportunity these young guys have coming in.
It reminds me, and listen, I'm not a huge Celtic fan, because I'm a Laker fan. So when you're a Laker fan,
we have to talk about the Lakers a little later.
Yeah, you can't be. It's like being a Celtic fan is an oxymoron. You can't do that.
You can't be both.
You can't be both. But you gotta respect what Boston did in this year particular, because they had some young guys, and then they mixed it in with some older guys, but guys that are playing at a high level. And it took them a minute to sort of mesh, but when they figured it out, they end up being the best team in the NBA. Last year, they made it to the finals. They lost. This year, they made it to the finals and won. Why? Because these guys learned how to play together. Everybody knew their role, and they perfected their role. They didn't try to do anybody else's job. And I see that potentially happening here. Once they figure out how to play together, everyone will know their defined role within this team. Whether you're on the first line, second line, third line, or the fourth, you're going to know your role. And the faster you understand and know your role, the better we will be as a team. We got scorers now. Now we got people that can put the puck in the net. Now we need to figure out, how do we distribute to those guys? What role are you going to be in each and every game? And when you are in that role, you got to accept it. That's the only way you're going to win. You got to accept the role that you're in and make and excel at that. So that's what I'm going to be looking for from the Nashville Predators. How they implement these guys, and then how do they accept their roles? Because these questions are going to be asked throughout the season, especially early on, the roles of each individual person. And they got to be able to accept whatever role they're in. But in accepting that, they got to enhance it and get better.
Yes, and in that portion of the season, remember last year they started 5-10, mm-hmm. but there were no big expectations. There wasn't a panic, because it was like, okay, this is new. Barry Trotz is bringing in a new coach. Not expected to have mm-hmm. to win. Let's find out what the young guys have. If they start 5-10 this year, there'll be a different vibe
yes.
going on. So they need to be able to win some while they figure it out, mm-hmm. but hopefully the enhanced levels and layers that they have to the roster. Plus, they already have the nucleus together. It's
yes.
not like they're coming in with a full new team. Most of the players will have played last year under Andrew Burnett, so hopefully that will enable them to be able to win at least reasonably well while they get these guys acclimated. So that'll be something to watch for. When we come back, Elliot Friedman is going to join us, and we'll get his assessment in the big picture of what the Predators did yesterday, what the league is talking about. We'll also ask him about the Saros Askarov stuff. Yaroslav Askarov, Elliot Friedman, I was watching live when he came on NHL Network and said, the Predators are shopping Yaroslav Askarov around. They're listening. They're getting a lot of calls. Barry Trotz had what he had to say about it yesterday. We'll cross-check that with what Elliot is hearing. Stay tuned. Hour number two is coming up here on Willie and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.